Good morning, everybody, and welcome everyone back from Pesach. Hope everyone had a nice yontif. And once again, we are ready to roll with our Sunday morning shiur. The topic that I would like to speak about today is very relevant to our times. And that topic is the question of inviting someone either to one's home or to a shul to participate in the Shabbos experience, a person who is not yet observant of Torah law, in a situation where you have suspicion or reason to believe that the person will come by car. So, obviously, on the one hand, you have the fact that you're encouraging the person to pursue Yiddishkeit by coming to your home. On the other hand, there is the fact that the person in doing so is violating Shabbos. So the question is this mutter or usser? Is this something that a person is allowed to do? And in today's day and age, where the kiruv field has become so vast that it's certainly a burning relevant issue to all involved. So the connection to the parsha yesterday is we have at the very beginning of the parsha here, it's on page 1. The pasuk says, Lo sekal al cheresh, that a person, you should not curse a person who is deaf. V'lifnei iver, lo sitein michshol. V'lifnei iver, and in front of a blind person, lo sitein michshol, you should not place a stumbling block. V'yareisa me'elokecha, and you should fear God, ani Hashem. So, literally, what the second part of the pasuk is saying, that you should not place a stumbling block in front of a person who is blind. The Chazal interpreted this in a much broader sense, in two ways. Okay? One way, which is not really found in the Gemara that I'm about to cite, but Rashi brings it, is that Lifnei Iver Osita Michshol doesn't just mean putting a stumbling block in front of a blind person, but it means anyone who's blind to any situation, to cause them to stumble would be a violation. So, for example, for a stockbroker to give bad advice to a client knowingly, to intentionally, for whatever reason, he has his own agenda, and he's giving bad advice, so the person who he's advising is blind. He's not literally blind, not physically blind, but he's blinded to this issue. He doesn't know the stock market very well. And he's calling you for advice, and you're giving him bad advice. So that's called Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Michshol in the broader sense. You're placing a stumbling block in front of a person who is blind. And obviously there are many other situations of this nature, but the basic idea, according to this interpretation, would be that any sort of bad advice to a person who is not knowledgeable, or a person who is seeking out even if he is knowledgeable, but if he's seeking out your opinion, so that means that to some degree he's blind. If he felt he was a total expert, he wouldn't be asking anyone else. So therefore, the fact that he's asking you means that he is to some degree blind in this matter, and for you not to give him the proper advice is a michshol, is putting a stumbling block in front of him. If it's deliberate, right. Yeah, if you give him what turns out to be bad advice, but you thought was good advice, then that's not a problem. In other words, that would be that you try to help him. But when it's... I'm sorry?
It doesn't mean he can't be sued.
Right. Rashi points out that it says, whenever it says in these psukim, v'yareisam elokech ani Hashem, that you should fear God. So why does the pasuk accentuate this point here? Because of the fact that here, this is something which is very delicate, and in a person's heart of hearts is the only place where this is known. Sometimes you could give someone what seems to be good advice, but you know deep down that it's not. So the pasuk makes a special warning that Ani Hashem, Hashem says, I know the truth. I know the truth. I know what you're really thinking. So therefore, even though you could fool the person and he may believe that you acted in his best interest, but if deep down you had your own agenda and that's why you gave him that advice, so Hashem says, I am going to take care of it. I am aware of that. Ani Hashem.
When you look at this, it looks like Ben Adam.
Yeah, so this is a Ben Adam L'Chavero and Ben Adam L'Mako. That's right. There you have a connection which is pointed out you know, that the idea that the Torah is broken up into two different sets of mitzvahs. You have the Ben Adam Makom, the mitzvahs between man and God, and the mitzvahs Ben Adam Lechavera, between man and man. So there is an interface. They overlap, because here you have what is essentially a mitzvah Ben Adam Lechavera, right? But nevertheless, it requires Yiras Shamayim, because in the world, you know, you could actually escape a lawsuit if you could establish somehow that you had reason to believe this was good advice. But if deep down you knew that it wasn't good advice, it could never be proven. It couldn't be proven in a court. But Hashem says, I know the truth. Okay, that's the interpretation that I think many people are familiar with. Now, there is another similar interpretation that's found here in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, which says as follows. The Gemara says, Minayin, this is on Davav Amid Beis and Maseches Avodah Zarah, the Gemara says, Minayin shelo yoshit adam kos shel yayin lenozir. From where do we know that a person should not hand a cup of wine to a nazir? A nazir is a person who has separated himself from certain pleasures of the world for a period of time, and one of the things that he must abstain from is drinking wine. So the Gemara says, from where do we know that you're not allowed to hand him a cup of wine? Similarly, from where do we know the Eiver Min Achai L'Vnei Noach? From where do we know that you're not supposed to go over to even a non-Jew? But a non-Jew, one of the seven Noahide laws, one of the seven mitzvahs B'nai Noach, is that a non-Jew is not allowed to eat Eiver Min Achai, is not allowed to eat a piece of an animal that was living, or even if the animal was no longer living, but it was severed from him from the animal when he was living. So this is prohibited even to non-Jews. So how do you know you're not supposed to do this? In other words, here what you're doing is you're passing it to this person, you're handing it to him. Says the Gemara, Talmud Lomar, V'lifnei Iver lo sitei michshol. That from this very pasuk we derive a concept that not only does apply to bad advice, which we just discussed, but here the Gemara is telling us that you cannot facilitate a person doing an avera. If a person who is prohibited from a certain thing says, please hand this to me, please hand this to me. Okay, I'm not allowed to drink a cup of wine. A nazir is not allowed to drink wine. But he says, can you please hand me a cup of wine? You're not allowed to give it to him. Why not? Because l'fnei iver lo sitein michshol. So says the Gemara. So you will ask, what's that? Even for a guy. So now, you will say, so 1 minute, how do they see that from this pasuk? The person is not necessarily, in what way is he blind? Right, a nazir knows, presumably, any person that becomes a nazir presumably knows that he can't drink wine. Okay, so if he's asking you for a cup of wine, what is he blinded to? He knows that he can't have it, so he's asking it. He's asking you to give it to him. I'm sorry? Well, let's say he's not asking. In other words, you're going to hand it. Fine, you're correct. In other words, it doesn't say anything about he's asking. It just says you can't pass it to him. But even so, he's not blind to this. He knows, presumably, that he's not allowed to do it. So apparently the answer which is given by the Mefarshim apparently is that he's blinded by his desire. In other words, his taiva, his desire for this pleasure is blinding him to his reality. In other words, he knows he's not supposed to have it, but yet he is willingly participating. Even if he didn't ask you, but you're handing it to him and he's accepting it, so he is being blinded by his yetzer hara, he's being blinded by his desire for pleasure, and apparently in the Chazal's view, that's also considered l'fnei iver lo sitein michshol. Yes. Okay, so we'll get to that in 1 minute. This is, in other words, from this Gemara, we see a little bit of a broader application. It applies to, first of all, it applies to Isurim, right? That you're not supposed to help a person violate a law in the Torah, and this is considered an Iver. The person is considered blind, even though one would think that presumably he's not blind. In other words, in this case, at least in the case of the Nazir, he probably knows that he can't do it, or the way the Gemara is presenting it would even be true in a case where he knows. So now the question is, but what about if he doesn't need you? What if you're just simply making some sort of, you're making it a little bit easier for him to do something that he could have done on his own? In other words, there are two possible scenarios here. One scenario is that he doesn't have wine and he has no connection to wine and you're giving it to him, right? There's another possibility. What about the fact What about a case where it's just simply a convenience? In other words, he could get the wine just as well, but you happen to be going to the liquor store, so he says, when you're going to the store, pick me up a bottle of wine. So what would be with that?
Yeah, go ahead.
You could theoretically. You could say that, but right. So the Gemara, so Abram and Achai might not be quite as apparent, but the Kos Yayin LeNazir, the way the Gemara presents it in a blanket form without any qualification, sounds like it applies in every situation. Seems to be the way that the Poskim understood this Gemara. So the Gemara says, v'ha'hacha d'chilo yavinu le'shakli iu v'ka'arvo l'fnevo l'sitem nechshol. So the Gemara, this is part of a discussion, the Gemara is saying that can we derive from this that a person violates this law even in a case where he could have done it himself, where you're merely a convenience for him? Says the Gemara, no. Hacha b'maya skinan, that's what that abbreviation is. Hacha b'maya skinan, here we are speaking, t'koi b'tshrei avri nara. We're speaking, the Gemara here, is referring to a case where they're on two different sides of the river. Meaning that the Nazir is standing on one side of the river. He has no access to wine. You are on the other side of the river and you happen to be traveling. In other words, let's say you're traveling today's day and age, right? He lives in a country where alcohol is prohibited. I don't know if there are such places anymore, but let's say there is. Okay, he's in such a place.
In a dry county.
And he calls you up and he knows that you're traveling, you're coming to him for a vacation or whatever it is, you're coming to town, and he says, pick me up a bottle of wine. So in that situation, had it not been for you, he could not violate the law. Says the Gemara, that is where we have the prohibition of l'fnei v'l'asitem michshol. However, if he could have just as easily done it himself, just that you made it more convenient for him, says the Gemara, that is not a violation of l'fnei v'l'asitem michshol. Okay, so this is a very, very important qualification of this halacha. Okay, in other words, the iser of l'fnei v'l'asitem michshol, as it applies to enabling a person to sin, only is in a situation where he needed you, where you provided something for him that he could not have had on his own. However, if he could just as well have gotten it on his own, albeit through more of an effort on his part or whatever it is, then there is no iser of l'fnei v'l'asitem michshol.
The table at the corner has wine and whiskey.
Yes.
Get up and get it.
Yeah. So the coin to the Gemara, if you got it for him, then that's
no,
not
it's there. It's there for everybody. It's a party.
Yeah. So that wouldn't be l'fnei v'l'asitem. In other words, if you're at a party and there's a bottle of wine on the table and the Nazir happens to be at the party also and he says, hand me a cup of wine.
No, if he himself get it.
And he got well, if he got himself, then he's what do you mean? Then he's violated.
Go to the table.
He could go himself and get it. It would be prohibited for him to drink the wine. But the point is that he doesn't need you. That's the idea. He doesn't need you. It's only when it's betray Avri Dinara, when they're on two different sides of the river, or anything similar to that. In other words, it doesn't have to be Dafka with the river, but any situation where without you he couldn't do it, that's when this Isra applies.
It'd still be over on something else.
Oh, we'll get to that in a second. Yeah, we'll soon see. Yes, go ahead.
Is there any gather to what his accessibility to it is?
It's hard to know. It's hard to know. In the Gemara and the Poskim, it's hard to know exactly what this applies to. But if he could get it tomorrow, so I don't know.
If he could get it in an hour.
Yeah, I don't know. Right, so I think if he could get it in an hour, that's probably also, that's like on the same side of the river. In other words, he got it now instead of an hour from now. The point is, he doesn't need you to sin. But so if he doesn't need you to sin, so then you didn't, it's not called that you caused him to stumble. He could, in other words, if he was determined to sin, he would sin without you too. So then it's not l'fnei v'l'asitem michshol.
If you want to get the wine to give it to a third person, is that a problem?
To give it to someone else to give to him, I think that would still be. Because if you know, in other words, if you know.
Oh,
you're giving him wine and he's going to give it as a gift to a non. No, that's all right. That would be okay. Yeah. That would be okay. That would be okay. All right. Now, the question is, so does this mean, therefore, does this mean that in a real life situation, I could do this? In other words, if a Jewish person who isn't observant meets me outside of McDonald's, and says, you know, do me a favor. For whatever reason, I can't go in there, but go buy me a cheeseburger and you know, here's the money. All right, swipe my card. I'll give you, bring me the cheeseburger. So, according to what we just said now, it wouldn't be an isser of Lefnei Velositim Michel because he could have done it himself. So if you turn over the page here to, page two, so the Shulchan Aruch says in the laws of Netilas Yadayim, a very interesting halacha, on the fourth line from the top, actually the third line from the top, at the very end of the line, in the Rashi print, it says, "V'osar lahachil l'misha lo natal yadav," that it is prohibited to give a person who has not washed his hands, Netilas Yadayim, to give him bread to eat. Why? Mishum lefneiv lo siten michshol. Because of this. Alright, in other words, again, we'll have to see how this fits with what we just said, but the Shulchan Aruch is ruling that if you have a person who has not washed his hands from the Tilos Yadayim and he says, give me a piece of bread, you cannot give it to him. If you look down on the bottom, so in the Mishnah Brura, in the Yud Beis, in the Mishnah Brura, which is the last two lines of the, at the end of the first big paragraph, large paragraph, it says, Mishum Lufnei Iver, says the Mishnah Brura, how do you reconcile this with what we just said? We just got finished saying that it has to be that without you he couldn't have done it. So if the person is saying, give me a piece of bread, what's the big deal? It presumably he could have gotten the bread himself. Says the Mishnah Brura, "Dahainu belechem shel hamachil," that in fact we're speaking here that you're giving him the bread. He doesn't have bread of his own. The belechem shel ha'ochel, because if he did have his own bread, v'yuchal akachas ba'atzmo, and he could have taken it himself, ein kan lufnei iver, says the Mishnah Berurah, then there would be no problem. In other words, if there's bread, if let's say you're sitting at some sort of simcha, okay, and you're sitting with a person who didn't, you know he didn't wash his hands until it's your time, he's not careful, but there's a plate of bread on the table, and he says, do me a favor, pass me the bread. Okay, so says the Mishnah Berurah, that wouldn't be a problem, because like we just said, he could have taken it himself. You're just a convenience. If you're just a convenience, there's no fneiver. So when the Shulchan Aruch, when the Ramah says that a person doing this would violate this law, he obviously is referring to a case where he didn't have the bread, you're facilitating the bread to him. Okay, now, here's the part that we're interested in. Says, continues the Mishnah Berurah, Mikol Makom, Kosfu Achronim, nevertheless, the Achronim write, the Osir Gam Vazer Mishum the Osir Lisayeya Yidei Ovrei Avera, says the Mishnah Brura, quoting the later authorities who came about after the Shulchan Aruch was written, that even if you will say that there is no Lifnei Iver violation here, which clearly there isn't, but nevertheless there is a rabbinic prohibition that you're not supposed to help a person sin. And that applies apparently even in a case where you're just a convenience for him. Okay, so even though he could have gotten the bread himself, but by you going ahead and making it easier for him, you're being misayeya lidei over aver. You're helping out a person to sin, and that is rabbinically prohibited. That's not the Torah's prohibition of putting a stumbling block in front of a blind person, but nevertheless, this is banned by the rabbis. Yes. In which case?
The Dano example you gave with the
guy. Yeah. That, right, so in other words, in any situation where you're helping the person, so it would seem, in any situation where you're helping the person sin, so this would be a rabbinic violation, yes.
Can I ask a question about how soon he would have to...
Go ahead.
The Bir Halacha says over here, Dr. Wilson, Lokidei Lechol Miyad.
Yeah, so that, but if you look at the reason that he gives, he says, in other words, the point that's being made here by the Bir Halacha, which I'm going to get to, hopefully at the end, is what about if you don't know for sure that this is going to happen? In other words, you don't know what the story is with this guy. He may, who knows? In other words, if he's, you know that right now, you know for sure he hasn't washed his hands. But if he says, pass me a piece of bread as he's leaving, and, you know, it could be he's going to eat it in his car without having washed his hands, or it could be that he's going to bring it home and wash his hands there, right? So that's, I believe, what the Bir Halacha is referring to. So, all right, we'll see. We will see about that.
Just a quick okay, follow through. Yeah. You're sitting at the table at a simcha. You know somebody didn't wash.
Yeah.
He asks you, what do you do?
Yeah, so
do you embarrass him in public?
Okay, so that's a good question. We once, years ago, spoke about the question of giving someone food who isn't going to make a bracha, a similar type of question, which is a very big issue nowadays because it's a common courtesy a lot of times in a person's office to provide drinks. You know, in all types of work, you see this, that people have receptionists, whatever. Oh, why don't you let me bring you a cup of coffee, or would you like some water, or something like that? And the person isn't going to say a bracha. The person is Jewish, not going to say a bracha. So this is a question in its own right. Maybe we'll get to this at the end. We once discussed this. This is not such a simple thing, but there could be room to be lenient in this matter. Now, coming back, returning to our Shaila. So our Shaila is inviting a person who is not observant to your home for a Shabbos meal if you think the person is going to drive. Now, if we analyze this question, so one could say that, what are you doing here? In other words, I'm not telling him to get in his car to drive, and I'm certainly not providing him with the car. Right? In other words, if I gave him a car and said, why don't you come to my house for Shabbos meal, clearly that would be lifnei v'lisita mitzvah, right? Because of the fact that you're facilitating a sin. You're encouraging him to do it. You're facilitating a sin, right? But he has his own car, and you didn't tell him to drive. So just that you invited him, he lives a distance away where it's quite reasonable or perhaps even guaranteed that he's going to drive. But in what way have you facilitated this? In other words, you're not providing him, if you go strictly by what has been presented so far, you're not providing him with the means to sin. In other words, in the case of the Shulchan Aruch, you're handing the person a piece of bread that he's going to eat without netilas yadayim. So you're providing the means. In the case of the Gemara, you're handing a cup of wine to a Nazir who's not allowed to drink it, so you're providing the means. But here, what is the means of his sin? Right? The way that he's going to sin is by getting into his car and driving. He has the car.
You're making him the Eber, really.
Okay. So here, the question is, so here we need to broaden the definition a little bit more and say that even though you're not giving him the material with which to sin, but you're creating a condition for him to sin. In other words, I'm creating a situation that didn't exist before by him. In other words, he didn't have an invitation to my house. So even though you'll say, but what do you mean this guy drives the whole Shabbos? Right, which is an argument that we'll soon see some people make in favor of doing this, that, well, what's the difference? If he doesn't come to your house, he's going to drive somewhere else. But the fact is that prior to your invitation, he did not have the condition that is necessary for this sin to take place. Because in this specific situation, he's driving to your house. Your invitation created that condition. So this is the question. Does this constitute lifnei v'lisita mitzvah? Does this constitute it? And even if it doesn't, what about Misaeli Deovri Avera? And are there any mitigating factors? This is the big question that we have today. So, there are basically out there three opinions. There are three opinions, okay, which means there were two Jews, right? There were one Jew, right? So there are three opinions that are out there, and if you call around to the various Kiruv organizations, you will hear each opinion cited by different groups. Some people follow the strict opinion, some people follow the very lenient opinion, and some people follow the in-between opinion. Alright, so we'll go from lenient to strict. The most lenient opinion is expounded by Rav Moshe Sternberg Shalom Biwell, who is one of the Rabbanim on the Eda Charedis in Yerushalayim. It was previously the chief rabbi of Johannesburg in South Africa. And in his Sefer Tshuvas van Hagos, which is, if you turn back to page 1, he was asked this question, and he said a very remarkable chiddush, which is the following. He says, I'll just read it from the top. He says, Nira, it would seem, she yisod ha-isr d'lifne'iver, that the foundation, the concept of this prohibition, hudumya d'iver shemachshilo. He says that in order to fit what the pasuk prohibits, you have to have a similarity to the pasuk, meaning you have to have malicious intent. A person who puts a stumbling block in front of a blind person is intent. What is he doing that for? Clearly, it's being done with malice. He's trying to get the person to trip. So says Rav Sternbuch that is the only situation that the Torah prohibited. He says avolam kavanoso rak l'tovas atzmo. But if the person who is giving the advice or is extending the invitation is doing it for that person's best interest, why am I inviting him for Shabbos? I'm inviting him to come to my house for Shabbos because I feel that if he will come and experience Shabbos, it will bring him closer to eventually begin to observe Shabbos himself, which, as we know, is a very, very effective way of getting people to observe Shabbos. I want him to see it. If you just teach him about it in a class, so, you know, I can give a class during the week, but how are you going to teach him about Shabbos? He can't do this, he can't do that. The experience, the positive experience, the enjoyable, experience of Shabbos, you have to actually be there. You have to experience it. So says Rav Sternbuch, so when you're inviting him, you're not trying to cause him to stumble. Your intention is for his well-being. So you'll say, yeah, that's true, but along the way, I'm causing him to drive, which is clearly not in his best interest, right? In other words, by causing him to drive, he's violating the malachas of Shabbos, which are from which is in what's called an Isser Chomer, a very severe Isser in the Torah. But nevertheless, says Rav Sternbuch, that's not what the Torah meant, because the Torah means only when you have malicious intent. And here, since your ultimate intention is for this person's well-being, he makes a remarkable analogy and says, "Kamosha rofe minateach lo nikra makachaveiro." He says that just like we find the Torah prohibits a person to hit someone else or to wound someone else, yet a surgeon is allowed to perform surgery. So how is that? He's making a wound. I'm cutting open the person. The Torah prohibits making a wound in another person. So the answer is, in Rav Sternbuch's opinion, this is highly debatable, but in his opinion, the answer to that is that, well, that's because your intention is good. The surgeon is trying to help the person. So even though he is hitting him, so to speak, he's wounding him, nevertheless, that type of wounding, the Torah didn't prohibit. Yes.
Okay, so in the case where you're an indirect conduit,
right,
then if the man knows you have a wonderful Fish Friday,
yes,
and he invites himself,
right,
and he says, "May I join you?"
Right.
And what's your responsibility?
Okay, so we'll get. I'll try to get to that at the end. Let me first go through all the opinions, and then we'll see, what you can say, because it's going to depend on each opinion. All right, so Rav Sternbuch says that the direct intention of the Torah is when the person has a malicious mindset. But if you're trying to ultimately help him, he says, but here, kach kan halo en kavanoso laharlo oliyaislo eitzosheno. Again, you're not trying to give him bad advice. Just that you're trying to get him to be makar of this person. He says further, "Umashu chaveru mechal Shabbos al yidezeh eino ella osa ro la'atzmo." So even though you'll say, "Yeah, but because of me, he got in his car and he drove," so that was his choice. That's what he chose to do. But that wasn't really what you were trying to get him to do. What you were trying to get him to do was to get him to kiruv. You were trying to get him to be inspired. So that's all you said. You said, "Please come to my house. I want to inspire you." The fact that he then took his keys and went into his car and turned on the motor, so that was his doing. That wasn't part of your plan. So it seemed that's what he's saying. Oh, hard to make out exactly what he's saying, but it seems that his point is that when as far as malicious intent, it's not a malicious intent. And therefore, it's as far as bad advice, so it's not, because you have good intentions. And you're not really either considered providing the means to sin because of the fact that, listen, it was up to him. It was up to him to do that. That was his decision. Now, would he say this in a situation where there's no way for the person to walk? In other words, let's say the person lives an hour away. It's not walkable. Or let's say you would have to go through a tunnel or a bridge that's not accessible to a person walking by foot. So you're guaranteeing that he's going to, there's no other way for him to get to it. It's unclear. But the point is that what he seems to be addressing, the question that he was asked, it was in a situation where it's likely that they're going to drive, it was walkable theoretically, but it's likely they're going to drive. And he said, I don't see a problem with it. This is the psak of Rav Sternbuch. However, he qualifies it in the next paragraph, and he says, Omnam chil Hashem yeshkan. He says, however, there is another possible issue that could arise here, and that is chil Hashem. In other words, an open desecration of Shabbos constitutes a chil Hashem, even when it's done by an irreligious Jew. It's a chil Hashem. Shebaim lebeisov b'mechonis b'farhesia b'etzim yom haShabbos. To see someone pull up to a Jew's house on Shabbos in a car, or to a shul for that matter, is a chil Hashem. And therefore, he says, "V'lochein yesh liros shal kolponim lo yichanu es mechonosam samuch ubeiso." He says, "So therefore, you should tell them, don't park in front of my house. Please don't park in my driveway. Okay? What's that? Yeah, right. In Israel, this is right. I don't know where he was living when he gave this advice, but the point is that there is an issue of chil Hashem here. Right? The old joke they used to say back in the day, what's the difference between an Orthodox Jew and a Reform Shul, an Orthodox Shul and a Reform Shul? So the answer was one block, because the Reform Shul, they parked right in front of the Shul, and the Orthodox Shul, they parked a block away. That was the old joke back in the day when the observance of Halacha was a lot weaker than it is today. But Rav Sternbuch's point, which is very, very relevant in a Shul situation, is that if a Shul has a parking lot, so even if you're going to follow the lenient opinion and not dissuade a person from driving to shul, but he can't park in your parking lot, the parking lot of the shul should be shut off, should be closed off for Shabbos. And he says, because the chil Hashem, where the people are driving in and out to attend the davening on Shabbos, he's talking about going to someone's home, but it's obviously the same thing if you're going to a shul. So he says that you have to take care of. If you're inviting someone to your house and you think he's going to drive, Rav Sternbuch says, not a problem for Naval Sita Michel, but you should tell him, please don't park in my driveway, don't park in front of my house, I can't have that. Okay, that is the most lenient opinion. Okay, you won't get, what's that?
Park in front of the rabbi.
Park in front of the rabbi's house. Right, okay. So that is the most, yes, go ahead. Lubavitch, I did speak to a Kira professional last night, which I'll get to soon, but I did not consult with any of the Lubavitch community. I believe that they subscribe to this and even beyond. I think that they look at it with the fact that in the long run it's going to be good for the person, and therefore that obviates everything that's in between. In other words, if in the long run this is going to bring the person to Yiddishkeit, so then, they cite the Gemara, which is, quoted out of context, that says that it's preferable to violate one Shabbos so that a person should accept Shabbos for more than one Shabbos. Yeah. So, alright, it's hard. That's I can't represent what they hold because I didn't speak to any of them. Yeah, yes.
Well, why the comparison to the bear?
Yeah.
Someone who's blind. I mean,
he's blind. He doesn't realize that it's prohibited to drive on Shabbos, or even if he does know, but he doesn't appreciate it.
He's blind to this
nuance of halacha. It doesn't mean, like we mentioned in the past, very hard. People in Kiruv will tell you all the time that it's very difficult to explain to someone why it's more in the spirit of Shabbos to walk 2 miles in the blazing sun than to get in the car and drive for 5 minutes. That's a very difficult thing to explain to people. So unless you're sensitized to Shabbos, you won't appreciate that. So therefore, a person is easily blinded by that. Right? People today, there's no question that we hold that, due to the lack of observance of mitzvahs in the broader Jewish community, so a lot of people are considered blind. He doesn't know. You see very often that a person, once he's sensitized to it, will stop doing it. But right now he doesn't know. So he doesn't appreciate it. So therefore that would be considered an iver. This is the kula of Rav Sternbuch. Okay, now going to the other extreme. Alright, the second opinion. Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked this question in 1953. The tshuva that's here on page 1 at the bottom right was written in 1953, which was before the Kirov movement began, but nevertheless, there was still, you know, Kirov going on in the world, just that it wasn't a movement like it is today. So he was asked by a man, Rav Naftali Kalbach, I don't know if he's any relation to the singer, but he was asked from this Rav in Detroit if he can invite, this man was the Rav in a shul, and he wanted to know, can he invite people who are not observant to come to the shul on Shabbos, if he knows that they're going to drive. So Rav Moshe Feinstein very strongly said, four lines from the top, he said, Veishafti, I responded, Dilahazmin es harechokim ba'ofen she'efshe yeshivob lochil Shabbos vaday osu. He says, so now, Rav Moshe said, if you're going to invite him, and there's no way he could do it without being Mechal Shabbos. Alright? Meaning that let's say it's too far for him to walk. So there's no question that he's going to be Mechal Shabbos. Rav Moshe says it's Usur, and he goes further and says something which is a big chiddush. He says, V'hu od garua may isur lefneiver. And he says that this is even worse than the prohibition merely of placing a stumbling block in front of a blind person. Shaharehu od be'isr mesis. Rav Moshe Feinstein says that if one looks in the Torah and Sefer Devarim, there is a very severe section of the Torah that deals with a person who is a mesis. A mesis is one who entices other people to sin. And even though the Torah there specifically is speaking about the sin of Avodah Zarah, but nevertheless, the Torah speaks very strongly. The person who's a mesis, I'm enticing another person to sin. That is a prohibition, says Rav Moshe, that's worse than lefnei v'asitim michshol. Because here you're encouraging him to sin. In other words, you're telling him, come to my shul. How's he going to get to your shul? He can't get there by foot. For whatever reason, maybe he's not capable of walking, maybe it's too far. So you're encouraging him to sin. So it says Rav Moshe, that is absolutely unacceptable. And he quotes a Gemara, even though one might argue that the prohibition of emesis is only exists in the case of Avodah Zarah, which is what the Torah is speaking about. But he cites a raya from a Gemara in Sanhedrin, which is debatable, but that's beyond the scope of this shir, that he proves from him that the isser of enticing a person to sin applies by all averis in the Torah. Okay. So then he proceeds to say, it's not here on the sheet, but in the rest of the tshuva, Rav Moshe says that not only would it be prohibited to do that, but it even would be prohibited, he's not sure, he says, he writes, he's not sure, but it could be that it would even be prohibited to just inform him that you're having davening in the shul. Because now you'll say, well, there I'm not enticing him to sin. So he says, well, you have two issues. In other words, Rav Moshe broadened the playing field. He said, there's one issue with Nevel Sitem Michshol, that you're creating a condition for him to sin. And then you have the second thing, that you're encouraging him to sin. You're saying, come. So you're encouraging him to sin. That's a mesis. So he says, if one reads the rest of the tshuva, he says, depending on the situation, it might not be both prohibitions, but it'll probably be either one or the other. In other words, if he can't walk, it's impossible for him to walk, and you're encouraging him to come, then it's both. If you didn't encourage him to come, just you informed him, right? But you know he's going to drive, so then it's not mesis because you didn't encourage him to come. I didn't invite him. I just mentioned that we're having davening. I didn't invite him. So that wouldn't be mesis. However, he says, Rav Moshe Feinstein said, but with Nevel Sitem Michshol would be. Right? And in a situation where you're encouraging a person to come, but he doesn't have to drive, but probably will, so he says, so then it could be that wouldn't be with Nevel Sitem Michshol because you didn't tell him to drive. He could have walked just as easily. However, it would be perhaps a mesis because of the fact that you're encouraging him. If you know that he's most likely going to drive, and you're encouraging him to come, so you have this prohibition. Okay, so this is the other extreme. Okay, day and night. Yeah.
What if your invitation includes please walk, or includes?
Okay, so what? All right, so what if your invitation includes please walk? So if it says please walk, so it has to be that in the view of Rav Moshe Feinstein, saying please walk is not good enough if you know that he's not going to. In other words, if you think that there's a good chance that he will, so then you could say it, or so it seems. But if you know, or if you have reason to believe that he's not going to walk, then saying please walk doesn't help, because in the interpretation of the halacha that Rav Moshe is following, you created a condition for him to sin. So even though it's true, if you said please walk, maybe you're not a mesis in that sense. In other words, I'm not enticing him to sin because I specifically advised him not to sin. But nevertheless, you know he's not going to do that. So if you know he's not going to do that, you created the condition that he's going to sin in. So that, in his view, would be enough to violate the law of Lefnei Vos Itam Michshol. Yes. Right.
Did you say that because you thought he might have changed?
No, so some people, so I'll come clean on this issue, okay? If some people claim that had it been later, he would have said otherwise. That's what some people claim, but that is highly speculative because there's no indication in any of his writings that he would have changed his opinion. The fact is the rabbi who asked him was interested also in Kiruv. So it wasn't a movement, but he was asking him. He said, I want this fellow to come to shul. I want him to come to shul. So why does he want him to come to shul? Because he'll become more observant. So it seems that the way it's commonly held is that he would not have changed his opinion. He would not have changed his opinion even in this situation. And I spoke to one of my chaverim last night who's heavily involved in the Kiruv organization in New York, and he told me that my own Rebbe, the Rosh Yeshiva Chavetz Chaim, Zatzal, held by this opinion also, that if you know the person's going to drive, or you strongly believe, assume he's going to drive, you can't invite him. You cannot invite him. That's the strict opinion. That is the strict opinion of Rav Moshe Feinstein. But you see a day and night difference, a day and night difference between this and what Rav Sternberg said. Alright, so now looking for something in between. So, the in-between opinion, I'm sorry, I'm still on the same page, I apologize, is the opinion of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was asked the question, the tshuva that is excerpted here on the sheet is dated 1988, okay, well into the Kiruv movement, so to speak, and he said as follows. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes that remarkable thing. If you look here, he gives four conditions, but the first thing he was talking about making some sort of, he was asked about, they want to make a beginner's minion. Very popular to have a beginner's minion, and the beginners are people who aren't observant, and in many cases, and they're going to drive. So he said the following. He said, Mutter, if you look here on the right side of page one, in Mincha Shlomo, that's the Chuvus of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, he says, Mutter lahazmin gam mi shegor rochok mimokom hatfila. It is permissible to invite a person who lives even far away from the shul, but you have to offer him a place to stay. In other words, you offer him, I have a place for you to stay. I'll give you, you could stay over by my house, or you could stay over in this house. But often in such a way that he's not going to necessarily need to be Mechal Shabbos. Says Rav Shlomo Zalman, Va'af im lo yikabel es ha'atzah. And even if the person declines the offer to stay in this house, nevertheless, ein chayovim lahagid lo sheyimna mishum kach lovo. You are not obligated to tell him that don't come. In other words, you could say, according, if you take this literally, you could call up the person and say, so, you know, my friend, I'd like you to come for Shabbos, and, you know, love to have you for the meals on Shabbos, and you're welcome to stay by me. I have a nice guest room, you'd be very comfortable. And please join us. So the fellow says, Rabbi, I'm not really interested in coming for Shabbos, but I'll be happy to take you up on it for Friday night, or for lunch, or something like that. Now when he says that, and he tells you that he's not coming to you for Shabbos, so obviously that means that he's planning on driving. Okay, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, that's alright, because you offered him a way to do it better. You offered him a way to do it that he would not violate Shabbos, right? And therefore, once you offered that, you're clear from Lefnei Vos Itam Michshol. You're clear. He says, and therefore, even though in the course of the conversation, he clearly declined, he indicated to you that he's not going to do it in the way that's permissible, He said, you don't have to say anything. V'gam ein tzrichim lahazir osel she'osel agiyah berechav. And he says even further that you don't even have to say, by the way, you know, you're not supposed to drive a car on Shabbos. You don't even have to say that. In other words, even though you know that he's going to come and he's going to drive, but as long as you gave him a realistic way to avoid the Isser, that's okay. This is what he says, a remarkable chiddush. Yes, sir.
Yeah, like a beginner's minion.
Yes.
And you have enough space for sleeping for two or three people.
Right.
Your beginner's minion is not going to have it. You probably have enough space. You have to have enough space for everybody.
Right. That's what it would seem. You have to have enough space for everybody. That well, you can call them one at a time and let them decline one by one.
But,
right. All right. Yeah. I'm sorry.
It's dangerous for the children.
Okay, so that's what we said earlier. So Rav Sternbuch said, "There's a chil Hashem." That's true. So that depends on the situation. But yeah, that's that. Okay, that has to be taken into consideration as well. Go. Further invitations to him.
To the meal.
Okay, so the way it's
interpreted,
right? No, if you invite him for Shabbos, you invite him to come to me for Shabbos, and he says, "I can't come to you for Shabbos, but I'd love to come for lunch."
No, he doesn't say I'd love to come for lunch.
Yeah.
He says I can't come to you for Shabbos.
Right.
I want to come the whole week. After he declines that, and you've made that offer,
right?
Can you invite him to say, "Well, at least come for a meal"?
Can you say at least come for a meal in that situation? I don't know. It's hard to know. See, I'll tell you. The story with this psak, this tshuva has a story attached to it. Okay, so it's printed in some editions of the Sefer Mincha Shlomo. I am told that in the later editions, this tshuva was pulled. Okay, it's not to be found there. That I didn't see that. The copy that the yeshiva has it. That's why you have it here on the sheet. But it was censored out. Now, one of my friends, someone who I know very well, Rabbi Naftali Portnoy, told me last night on the phone that he spoke to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach himself. He spoke to him directly on this point, and he said that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach apparently said that it was taken out of context. To what degree it was taken out of context, it's hard to know. I mean, he wrote this, so it's hard to how could it be taken out of context? But he apparently, Rav Shlomo Zalman said that this, you could really only do this if you see movement on the person's part. Like if you see that the person it's really helping, you know, like obviously the first time you have no way of knowing that. But to continuously do this to a person who's not moving, in other words, he's not becoming inspired. So week after week, you're going to keep inviting him based on this heter. So Rav Shlomo Zalman said that he didn't mean that. He didn't mean that. He meant that you could do this, you know, once or twice and then see how it's going. See how it's going, and you know, if it looks to you like it's helping, so then you can continue doing it. That's what I understood. That's what I was told. Meaning that this tshuva now it happens to be that in the world of Kirov, this is the horse that everyone rides on. Okay, in other words, what Rav Sternbuch said is the extreme lenient position, which some people follow. Lubavitch apparently follows something along those lines, you know, but the mainstream Kirov organizations, I don't believe, go by that. But they do go by this, a lot of them. So this tshuva was addressed to a rabbi on the faculty of the Yeshiva Ar Samech in Yerushalayim, and this is widely quoted. So it's hard to know. In reality, there are, you know, it's cryptically written here. Now he does say further, he also makes the point that you have to make sure that the parking lot is closed on Shabbos. He says Chayiv Leo Sogor. He says Migrash Chaniyah in the second section here. Beis Migrash Chaniyah Shal Beis HaKnesses, which means the parking lot of the shul. Okay, Chayiv Leo Sogor B'Meshach Kol Shabbos V'Yontif. It must be closed. You have to physically put barriers. Don't allow people to park in the shul parking lot because of the fact that presumably that because the Chil Hashem. It's a Chil Hashem. Now what, if you want to get into the analysis of the halacha, so what is Rav Shlomo Zalman, we know what he's saying, but what does he mean? Meaning, how does he, so what is his interpretation of the pasuk? right? In other words, it seems at the very first glance that he has a novel interpretation that Lifnei Osita Michshol is only in a situation where you're doing it in such a way that he has no way out. He has no way out. But if you're providing somehow a way for him to do it beheter, that so even though he could well be is not going to take you up on it, that's good enough. That's what he says. Now it's hard to fully grasp that because, you know, then why do you even need to invite him to your house? He could choose not to come altogether. Right? In other words, he could choose not to come. So why isn't that good enough? I didn't force him to come. I told him he can come. So you'll say, well, but you created the condition. All right, but if I created the condition, then the fact that I offered him a way out doesn't really... Whereas if that's called creating the condition, even though I enforce him to come, but he's choosing to come based on my invitations, and then why is it different in a case where you gave him a place to stay if you don't think he's going to take you up on it? So there are those who claim that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach only meant this if there's good reason to believe that he will take you up on it. But if you know that he's definitely not, or most probably not going to come to you for Shabbos, so then there are those who say that he didn't mean that in that case it would be mutter. But there are those who, the reason why, if in fact it's so that it was taken out of the subsequent editions of the Sefer is because it's a very big heter and it's not clarified well enough what exactly did he mean. In other words, he's just saying that you can invite the person as long as you give him a way out, but what about, you know, doesn't it depend on how likely he is to follow your offer? So it's unclear. So these are the three opinions that are out there. Okay? And again, depending on who you speak to, so, you know, sometimes you'll hear in this Kirov organization, they have this policy, this one has this policy. These are the opinions. Okay? I don't know of any other opinions other than these three. These are the three basic opinions on the extreme lenient side. Rav Sternbuch, who says, the novel interpretation that Lifnei Osita Michshol only is in a situation where you had malicious intention, but where you're ultimately interested in the person's well-being, then there's no problem. The extreme strict position is Rav Moshe Feinstein, who said that you can't do it as long as you created a situation that he's gonna violate Shabbos, that's no good. In between, you have Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, which, again, it's there in print, and this is relied upon quite a bit, but the question is, what exactly did he mean? All the nuances of this. How likely does it have to be? How many times can you do this? And so forth. That is not clear from the tshuva. So, hopefully, you know, in the Kirov organizations, they're relying on, you know, some interpretation of some Adam Gadol who they spoke to directly, because just to go by what's in print is a little vague. Yes?
If you're giving a person an invitation to come, you know he's not going to do it, are you turning him into a mazed then?
If you know, what do you mean?
Let's say he's a shogeg, he drives, he doesn't know it's prohibited.
Well, he still doesn't know it's prohibited just because you invited him.
Yeah, but if you're giving him a condition that if you please come and stay.
Oh, that's what you mean. You mean
you
if you tell him?
Not do
well, okay. So that in general is a question. You know, that's also the old joke that they say about the rabbi who said that I got my entire congregation to go in the lamutav. I was machzir my entire congregation lamutav, which literally means that I got my entire congregation to go in the good way. So they asked him, "How did you do that?" So he said, well, the Gemara says, mutav shiyu shogigin v'ayum ezidim, that it's preferable that a person should sin not knowingly than to sin knowingly. So the Gemara uses the expression mutav, right? So he said, I don't teach them anything. I don't give any halacha shiurim, and therefore, whatever sins they do, they don't know. So if I would tell them, it would be worse. Okay, so that argument obviously is not something that's halakhically viable position. In other words, you have to tell people. Now, to tell there are situations where you don't. We discussed this once that there are situations that it's better not to say anything. That there are situations, but they're limited. In other words, in a situation where it's not clearly prohibited by the Torah and so forth, and so then if the person just doesn't know and it's not a well-known thing, so then and you know that if you tell them they're not going to listen, and you know for sure that if you tell them they're not going to listen, so then there is such a concept. But in general, you know, the education is, you know, the belief is that if education is done the right way, people will be inspired. Yeah, yes.
What about the concept that United States would have the status of a...
Tinuch and Nishba. Yes, yes.
Okay, so they've been captured by...
Right.
So don't we have an obligation...
Yeah, but again, even a Tinuch and Nishba, you can't cause that person to do a veris. In other words, there's no special dispensation for a Tinuch and Nishba that, well, if he's Michal Shabbos, you know, if he's Michal Shabbos, it's okay. He's the same Jew as I am. The fact that he doesn't know doesn't make him any less of a Jew than I. So therefore, I can't on that basis. In other words, it's not an option.
If you knew that somebody could be saved on Shabbos from being captured, you wouldn't have an obligation to save them from that?
So that's a question. In other words, to save someone from... So the answer is most poskim would say you would be allowed to do that on Shabbos. But the question is here, first of all, there it's a guaranteed result. In other words, you could save him, and if not, he's captured. Here, who's to say what's going to come from this? You know, maybe something good will come, maybe it won't. You know, it's only a chance, you know. So that, I think, mitigates it. Yeah, yes.
In all these tshuvas,
yeah.
It doesn't address when you went back to the Shabura, brings the
Rabban. Yeah, I'm going to get that right now. Thank you. Yeah, that's what I want to finish up with. So now, as is being correctly pointed out, this all addresses the Isra of Naval Sita Mikshal. But the Ramah had said that there's another thing, that you can't be Messiah Alidei Ovre Avera, that you cannot help a person sin, even if it's not technically, is a rabbinic violation of even if you don't technically violate the law of Lufnei Sita Mikshal. So to that, I looked around, it's hard to know. It seems that this rabbinic law of Messiah Alidei Ovre Avera is not so clear when it applies and when it doesn't, but one thing that is pointed to is a psak from the Netziv, that the Netziv, the great Gadol from the late 1800s, the head of the Volozhin Yeshiva in Russia, so he, in his tshuvas, Meshiv Dovar, was asked if a rabbi could be Masada Kedushin at a wedding where the couple is not going to follow the laws of family purity, where they're not going to follow the laws of Taras and Mishpacha. So the question is that, well, you're marrying them, so, you know, you're Misayeli de Avera, right? Now, so you'll say, well, maybe it's also with Neva Lasita Mechshol. So I believe that, I just saw it quickly last night, I believe that he was referring to a situation where you explain to them that this is what's supposed to be, but they're not going to listen. So it's not with Neva Lasita Mechshol because you clearly spelled it out for them that they're not supposed to do it. But you know they're not going to listen. So he says a very big chiddush, which is that misayeli de over avera, that rabbinic law only applies if the sin is immediate. But if you gave the case that the Shulchan Aruch said, the Ramah's case, where you're handing someone who didn't wash his hands a piece of bread, he's going to eat the bread right away. But if you're doing something that in turn will lead to something else, he said that's not Misayeli de Ovre Avera. Why that is, I don't know, but he, a very great scholar, he must have basis to say that. That's what he says in the Netziv. Netziv. Yes. So, Meshiv Dover, Chuvus Meshiv Dover. There are other opinions that are brought. There are some say that it's not considered Misayeli de Ovre Avera if the person is using their own property to sin. So again, the case in the Shulchan Aruch was handing the guy a piece of bread, which is not his bread. Okay, so even though you'll say it's bread that was available to him, but it wasn't his yet. But a person uses his own thing to sin. See, the arguments that are made, if you ever get into this, I'll finish on this point. If you get into this with people, especially in the liberal camp that holds that this is all mutter, they'll say to you, come on, you know, what do you think? If you don't invite him to your house for Shabbos, what do you think he's going to be doing? He'll be driving to the movie theater. He'll be doing who knows what, right? He'll be doing all kinds of averus. So if you bring him to your house for Shabbos, he'll do less. So you say, what kind of naval sita mikshal? It's even better. You're saving him from sinning because he'll be by your house for your Shabbos meal, which let's say takes an hour and a half. For that hour and a half, he's not going to violate Shabbos. And if he stays home, he probably will, right? Then all kinds of other arguments of that nature, which people make. So it doesn't sound like, in terms of Lufnevel Sita Mitchell, it doesn't sound like that holds a lot of water, but it may hold water when it comes to Mseeli Dovre Avera. In other words, to help a person sin, so there already there's more flexibility, it seems that there's more flexibility, and it could be that it's true that none of these poskim address that point, which is strange, because it's clearly stated in Shulchan Aruch, But they're all dealing with Lefnei V'Lasita Michshol, but I believe that the Misael De'Avir Aver is a more lenient consideration that has stricter guidelines. It has to be that the person is going to directly, immediately use your thing to sin. That's where it seems to be. Okay. Yes,